Okay, thank you to the Wasserman family. So we're learning the Le'iloi Nishmas Yitzhak Ben Chaim, Papa Andre. Shema should have an Aliyah. And if anybody else wants to refu shleima for a good month, month of Adars, the month of month to have good things happen in our lives and the lives of the Jewish people, so we should be zocha to good things. It's interesting. Mishenichnas Adar marbim besimcha. It's very easy to be happy on Purim itself, but you're supposed to be already adding simcha when the month begins. And if you think historically, at the beginning of the month of Adar in the Purim story, that was like the darkest time in Jewish history. Like that, the beginning of the month of Adar, everything was still in action. Like there was still very, very real threat hanging over the world of the Jewish people. So to be able to have simcha at the beginning of the month of Adar, to be able to already start increasing that in the first few days of the month, is that's where the hard work begins. So let's jump in a bit, talk a little bit about what is unique about Purim in its relationship to the concept of Talmud Torah. So we have a Gemara. Oh, very nice.
Thank you for speaking.
We have a Gemara Masechet Shabbat. Gemara Masechet Shabbat, which we just read in the Parsha, of the Sereta Dibrot, that the Jewish people stood at the foot of the mountain. But Yitzvu B'Tachti Tahar, the lowermost part of the mountain. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Dimi Barchama Barchasa, I'm in the first source at the top, which we've maybe heard this concept before. When they're standing at the foot of the mountain, the way Chazal understood that is they weren't just standing physically or geographically at the place at the bottommost part of the mountain, but they were actually standing under the mountain. The foot of the mountain means the mountain was on top of them. The Kadosh Baruch Hu picked up the mountain, Kivyachol, and said to them, "Im atem mekablim et haTorah, mutav. If you accept the Torah, great. V'im lav, and if you don't, sham teik furaschem. There will be your burial." So Gemara says something very interesting. That part of the Gemara a lot of people are familiar with. The next part of the Gemara is less common, pass this one down. Less quoted or less spoken about. And this was actually a good thing for the Jewish people. If Hashem holds the mountain over our heads, what are we able to do? Next time we do something wrong, we'll just say, wasn't my choice. You forced me to accept the Torah. That's called the Modah Rabba L'Oraisa. It's a Modah Rabba L'Oraisa in the English here. It's a substantial caveat. Okay? So another way of saying, we have an excuse. We have an excuse. We have a way out. We have a way to be able to say that at the end of the day, it wasn't really our choice, and it wasn't something that we wanted necessarily. It wasn't something we were fully agreeable to. Nevertheless, we did it. We took it. We didn't want to die. We didn't want to, you know, lose our chance. Maybe it could be good. Whatever the cheshbon was. Then the Gemara says, but something changed. Much later in history, but something changed, and that was on Purim itself. Amar Rava, Afal Pichein, Hadar Kiblu B'mei Achashverosh. The end of the Gemara says, even so, they again accepted it willingly in the time of Achashverosh. How do we know? Because it says at the end of the Megillah, Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim, right? They ordained, they took upon themselves, they accepted upon themselves and upon future generations. Kimu ma shekiblu kfar. They fulfilled, or they ordained, they accepted what they had already taken upon themselves by force. This time only it was by choice. So what happened on Purim is we re-accepted the Torah. We had like a renewal of Matan Torah, a renewal of Kabbalat Torah, and that acceptance in and of itself was something that we're supposed to view as the beginning of a new era in terms of the Jewish people's relationship to Torah. Now there's an obvious question that's asked by basically all the Rishonim on this Gemara. I didn't put it here on the sheet. But we all know the Jewish people said Nasa V'Nishma. What does Nasa V'Nishma mean? We want it. We're going to do it. We're going to listen. We're going to hear. We're going to learn. We want it. We accept it. So what is this business of Hashem having to put the mountain over their head? If they're willing to accept it, it's a good question, right? Tosot asks a question. Others ask a question. Tosot's answer, maybe the next day they'll wake up, they'll look inside the book and they'll say, 25 hours in Yom Kippur, that's not really my speed. You know, Shemitah, I don't know if I can do that one. And they might like backtrack. So Hashem puts them out of their head just to make sure that they don't backtrack. That's Tosot's answer, in a nutshell. The Maharal gives a different approach. And this is in the middle of the page. And what the Maharal does is he establishes a kind of a paradigm or framework for how we should view Torah. And there's really two ways to think about this, two ways to think about our lives as Jews. One way to look at how we live, how we operate as Jews, how we operate as Torah observant people, is to view it as something that, you know what, today I said a bracha after I ate my pizza, or today I gave tzedakah, and I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. I feel really good about that. And you should. It's good to feel good about doing good things, about doing the right things. But there's a different way to look at it. A different way to look at it is that as well, but that's a secondary. The primary is I view Torah as I can't be without this. It's something that's so essential to who I am. It's so essential to my being. It's so essential to my essence that I can't view my life in any other way. And that is what the Maharal explains, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to do when he put the mountain over the heads of the Jewish people. Here's what he writes. It wasn't for no reason. There was a reason for it. As we said, they already said, we accept the Torah. They were willing. It's no problem. Hashem was afraid that we, like Tosfot said, like we were going to, you know, backtrack and back out of it on the next day. Doesn't make sense. Why would they back out? They were willing to accept it. Why would they back out? Yesh lomar, end of the second line. The Jewish people shouldn't view their relationship to Torah. Bitul kabal sator ki miritzonam kibul Yisrael. Say, look at us. We accepted the Torah. We didn't have to, right? It was a choice. That was the danger. The danger was that we would view our Kabbalah Torah as a people as something that we chose, as something that we opted into, as opposed to viewing it as essential to our being, viewing it as essential to our very foundation of who we are as individuals and as a people. If we think we can exempt ourselves at any point. That's why Hashem put the mountain over our heads. What does the mountain over our heads really represent? It represents a way of thinking, or a way of living, or a way of being. Shem muchrachim lekabel Torah. We have to realize, without this, we aren't. We aren't the Jewish people. The world is not the world. And we need this. You can't get away from something like that. Something that's built into the fabric. Hashem Baruch Hu made it that way. He goes on. I didn't bring the rest of the piece here. He talks about different types of not wonderful relationships that the Torah talks about. A man engages in a relationship with a woman in a non-consensual way. And there's a mefate, there's an ones, there's different types of relationships. So one of the relationships is when a man forces himself onto a woman. He has to stay married to that woman. He has to remain in that relationship. Almost as like a punishment, in a way, for engaging in that kind of behavior, for engaging in that kind of relationship, which is really a negative example. But the Maharal uses it to talk about how Hashem, through his love for the Jewish people, right, and that's really what Har Sinai was all about, is the marriage between God and the Jewish people, but God didn't want the Jewish people to ever think that they could walk away, that they could get out of it. It had to be nitzchi. It had to be eternal. So let's think a little bit about these two experiences. When we received the Torah the first time, really the second time, which was on Yom Kippur, and on Purim, the second Kabbalat Torah. So it's a very cute story. It's a beautiful story. It's also a cute story. That's told about Rabbi Leibel Eiger. This story I found in a sefer from Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. It's on the bottom left side. Rabbi Leibel Eger was the grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eger. You may have heard that name before if you've ever studied Gemara or Halacha. Rabbi Akiva Eger, one of the great halachic commentaries on Shas, Shuvot, and his grandson Nebuch became Hasidish, became a Hasidic Rebbe. And it was obviously to the dismay of his grandfather. But what could he do? He has to respect the choices, the life choices of his, you know, off the derech. It's not like it's, man, at that time, by the way, becoming Hasidic was not considered such a straight path. He tells a beautiful story about Yom Kippur by the Reb Leibel Eger. I'm in the second paragraph here. Tamid Chacham Echad, She'enam Mefursam, B'tzibur Gadol, Mimenu Kama Tzvim Balacha, Rabbi Huda Noach Brower. This is the name of the person who came to visit by Reb Leibel Eger. So he tells a story, if you look in the fourth line. Hu Siper Shepam Belel Yom Kippur, Kol HaTzibur Chika, L'Rabbi Reb Leibel Ad Achad Asrei Balayla. So it was 11 o'clock at night, Yom Kippur night, and everybody was waiting for Kol Nidre. Kedeli Palel, Kol Nidre. Bevada, Yamikonin, everybody said, of course, he must be, you know, praying very hard, meditating and preparing himself, right? Obviously, we can't start Kol Nidre before he's ready for the day, for the Yom Hadin. HaKadosh V'Tahor, Yaldei Limud Torah, V'Konel Avod Hashem. Avod Hashem B'Simcha. Zeh Yikar, he must have been preparing himself in such a level. Yivdu Ad Hashem B'Simcha, as we say, it's not just empty words, he lived Yivdu Ad Hashem B'Simcha. So he has to prepare himself. So they went to call him. Look at the end, three lines from the bottom. Chashu shemina stam hushar b'manginam yucheret at Gemara. They thought, it's Erev Yom Kippur, it's already Yom Kippur. You must be thinking about tshuva and you know, mechila and kapara and all of the big key words, the taglines of Yom Kippur. And what did they find? Achlo. He was singing Shoshanas Yaakov. I don't know which tune he was doing, but he was singing Shoshanas Yaakov on Yom Kippur. Why? Because there's a connection between Yom Kippurim and Purim. Yom HaKippurim. So I want to explore that a little bit through a few different sources. We'll turn the page. And we titled this shiur, Purim, A Great Excuse to Be Happy. So it's a little bit play on the first opening idea about having an excuse, not having an excuse. We'll see how that plays in. So Rav Kook, in his Perush on the Sidur, when he goes through his discussion on the brachot of the Megillah, he has a whole essay about how he understands this idea that we reaccepted the Torah on Purim. And what he writes in a nutshell is that we thought that we could integrate within Persian society. Right? The parties, we know the story, what happened. And we did integrate into Persian society in a large way. And it was a problem, and Hashem wasn't so happy with it. And that, you know, the Midrashim talk about, that was what brought on, according to some, that was what brought on the Gzeira of Haman, this decree of Haman to destroy the Jewish people for their participation in the meal of Achashverosh. So he writes, here on the page, and this is a translation from a book called Silver from the Land of Israel, a very beautiful sefer. It goes through the different pieces from Rav Kook in English. And he writes that with the realization that assimilation is not the answer, their only true protection is Hashem's providence, they reaffirm their commitment to keep the Torah and its mitzvot. That was the response. So they realized, this is what we have to be. We can't be like the rest of the nations. This is the meaning of the verse, Kimo v'kiblu, like we saw, the Gemara that we saw on the first page. Talmud teaches that the renewed commitment to Torah complemented and completed the original acceptance of Torah at Sinai. What was missing at Har Sinai? Meaning, what was added? What changed on Purim that wasn't there by the first time they accepted the Torah? The dramatic revelation at Har Sinai contained an element of coercion, as we mentioned. Alone and helpless in the wilderness, Bnei Yisrael were hardly in a position to refuse. The Midrash portrays this limited free choice with Hashem's threat, right? Shamtei Kvarazchem. If you look in the next line, in time of Achashverosh, there was nothing pushing the Jewish people to take on the Torah by choice and not by force. So that moment was unique, and it was different, and it was what he calls a willingness to speak out and publicize who we really are inside. And that is how he explains the idea of drinking on Purim. It's an interesting concept. Hopefully only good things come out when people are in that state on Purim. But he writes that this idea of drinking, in the next paragraph, you can read it on your own, he writes that it's a statement about our willingness to be true to who we are and to bring out that inner voice, which is really unique to every person, but of the Jewish people in general. That's something that Yayin is able to get us to that point. It allows us to express emotions or ideas that we wouldn't necessarily share on a regular day with just anybody in the street. That's what Purim allows us to do. It allows us to express ourselves in a way that we feel authentic, because the Torah is authentic to the Jewish people. So let's look at two other ideas here, and we'll wrap up. Rav Hutner, Yitzhak Hutner, who was one of the Gedolei Ador, the last generation in the yeshiva in America, and he wrote a very deep sefer, which in the last 20 or so years has become a little bit more popular in the yeshiva world. Not a Hasidic Rebbe, but he writes in a very deep way, sometimes with a Hasidic approach. And here he writes on the idea of Purim, Yom Kippurim. And what he says is that Purim and Yom Kippurim have something in common. What they have in common is they're both days of Kabbalah. Not Kabbalah, like the study of Kabbalah, but Kabbalah that we're accepting upon ourselves something. And each of these days, we're accepting upon ourselves something different, but something. There is a Kabbalah. And he writes like this, B'Yom Kippur, second line, HaMedubar Hu Kabbalah Lahaba. What are we doing on Yom Kippur? We're thinking about how I'm going to be a better person tomorrow, next week, next month, and a year from now. Right? Kabbalah Lahaba. Last year wasn't so great. This year, it's going to be better. That's our acceptance on the future. Again, it's also a stage of the tshuva process itself. Ubipurim, HaMedubar Hu Al Odo Kimu V'Kiblu. On Purim, it's a different kind of Kabbalah. We're talking about the reacceptance of the Torah. But there's a difference between these two Kabbalahs. On Yom Kippur, we do something. We have what the Rambam calls, what the Gemara calls, charata. Charata is I feel badly. Remorse. I actually, whether I speak it out, whether I say it, whether I think it, I have a moment on Yom Kippur where I look back at my year and I say, you know what? I feel really bad about that time that I shouted at my parents, bless you. I feel really badly about that time that I said something not nice to my friends. I feel really badly about that time that I, you know, didn't pay the fare on the bus, whatever the story was. If they check, they don't check. They still have that system? Yeah. The rabbit system, what's it called? Yeah? All right. Something's don't change. So, and you feel bad. And you feel bad. You have charata. You have a real feeling of, you know what? I know it was wrong. At the time, maybe I didn't sense it, but now it's Yom Kippur. Everything's hanging in a balance a little bit, and I feel it. So, on Yom Kippur, there's charata. There's this feeling of looking back and actually feeling bad. Purim is just a Kabbalah. So let's explain what this means. He explores this idea. Look in the letter Bet. What happened on Purim? No more excuses. We accepted the Torah willingly, by choice, with full Naseh v'Nishma, we want it. We're not doing this, you know, and tomorrow we're going to wake up and speak Lashon Hara and say, you put the mountain over my head, I don't have to do it. No, the day after Purim, no more excuses. That's called the Bittul Modah Rabbah. We can't have this convenient excuse anymore. Mashmu'ta shel Modah, look what he explains, the idea of this Modah, this excuse, Isha Adam Moser Modah To'ein, you're saying, Ki HaMaseh Shehu Asah, okay, so I spoke Lashon Hara. I said something I shouldn't have said, right? What I'm saying about that action, lo na'aseh al yedei ha'ani shelo ha'atzmi. That wasn't really me. That wasn't Effie Kleinberg. It was outside of me. It was my the bad side, the part that doesn't really define or express who I really am. And not the part that I want people to know me by either. Who's the Ani? Who's the Ani inside of me? The one that I want people to know me by, to think about me by. So when I say that wasn't me, what I'm saying is, right? What I'm saying is, I'm getting rid of that feeling of an excuse. Something external, something, I didn't mean it, I didn't, it's not the real me. And we've all said that. We've all said that in our lives. It's not who I am, it's not how I talk, it's not how I act. And when we say that, hopefully we're truthful when we say that, we really don't believe that inside of us we're bad. We believe that we're good, and we want to do good, and we want to use all of our kochot for good. When you're getting rid of that, you're saying, when you get rid of that excuse, what are you saying? That is me. That's actually who I am inside. So look how he explores this. It's such a powerful thought, and it really brings home the idea of what Purim is all about. Letter Gimel. Yom HaPurim, Shanu Dani Noto L'Yom Bitul Moda Rabba Lo Raita. Perusho, Shehu, Shebiyom Zeh. What happens on Purim? We are recognizing Bibihirut with clarity. Ubrirut ki ha-naseh v'nishma. That moment of saying, Naseh v'nishma, what is that? Shayachu le'etzem enekuda shavayateinu atzmuti. What I'm saying is that's really who I am. That's really the real me, the one that I really want to be, the one that I really want to express, the one that I really want people to know me by. V'nimtza, this is the key line of the whole thing. Fourth line of Gimel. Dehakiblu de Purim. What happened on Purim when we re-accepted the Torah? Machriz, what am I shouting? What am I proclaiming? What am I yelling out to the world and everybody around me? Ki ani ani hu ha'ish me'etzem ritzoni nishpati b'Har Sinai nasev nishma. When I stood at Har Sinai and I said nasev nishma, that wasn't because there was a mountain hanging over my head. That was because I wanted it. That was because I realized that I need this. I realized that I can't be without this guide in my life. So why is it that when it comes to Yom Kippur there's charata and when Purim there isn't? He brings it home. It's a beautiful thought. Letter Dalet. Lu'umat zeh b'hilchot tshuva. The Rambam writes in Hilchot Tshuva. She'ikar ha'charata. What happens when a person feels badly, has remorse, has charata? It's, you're making a statement. She'ani, second line, eineni oto ha'ish she'pa'al otam ha'masim. That wasn't me. It's not denying that you did it. It's not saying I didn't speak Lashon Hara. That wasn't the real me. That wasn't an expression of the inside person that I want people to know me by. The Rambam says to the extent that you change your name because you don't want people to know you by that. That's what charata means. That you get to that point of feeling so badly about yourself that you want to change the status of the past. You obviously can't erase it. You can't take the words back. You can't erase the sins. They happen. They're recorded. They're there forever. But I can at least feel that I don't want that to stick with the person that I want to be tomorrow. And that's real emet that's coming out of the person. V'nimtza, so what happens? D'mahalecha nefesh b'charata du Yom Kippur, fourth line. What happens on Yom Kippur? Hu hamalech shemesira moda'a. What am I saying on Yom Kippur? I'm making an excuse. The reason why I spoke Lashon Hara is because I was having a bad day. It's an external reason. It wasn't who I am. It's not who I am. I don't speak that way. I don't act that way. I don't talk that way. I don't treat my friends that way. I don't talk to my siblings that way. I don't do things like that in public, whatever the story was. It was something that happened that caused me to do it. It was, I don't know, I can't explain it, but I know that that wasn't who I truly am, or who I truly want people to think I am. But what happens on Purim? Purim is exact opposite. Purim is exact opposite. What happens on Purim, four lines from the bottom, We're canceling out the world of excuses. We're saying, I want to live as me. And I want that everything that I do, and every word that I say, and every way that I say it, should be an expression of the true me. And you know what? If it comes out bad, that's also the true me. That's the scary part about it. Meaning it's responsibility. Right? There's a responsibility to saying, I have no more excuses. But it's also very powerful. Right? And in many ways, it's more motivating. Because when you do things because you were forced to do them, you're not as motivated. You're not as pushed. You don't feel as badly when you mess up. But when you know that it's all riding on, this is who I really am, and this is who I really want people to see, to see in me. That's why on Purim there's no charata. Because charata is all about, that wasn't really me. I feel badly about it, but it wasn't me. So on Purim, we don't have any of that. Because we get rid of that whole concept on Purim. That's what happened. Kimu v'kiblu. There was nothing pushing us against the wall. We were on top of the world. And that's the moment that we said, Hashem, we want this. We want this, and we want to express this, not as by force, but by choice. Let's look at one last idea. From one of the darkest places and one of the darkest times of history, much later than the story of Purim, from the depths, mamash from the depths, the Eish Kodesh, Klonimus Kalman, Shem Yimkom Damo, who was murdered in the Holocaust, who somehow was able to speak to the Jews around him in the Warsaw Ghetto, in the years between 1940 and 1942. In this book, the Eish Kodesh, for those who studied it before, was found after the war. They found just the pieces of paper hidden in a wall, one of the ruins of the Warsaw Ghetto. And I believe that this piece on Purim was written in 1942, if I'm not mistaken. You just imagine, 1942. Any day of the war, but 1942 in the Warsaw Ghetto, 1 year before the Warsaw Ghetto was closed, before they liquidated the ghetto, for the Warsaw Uprising, etc., for those who know the history. And what's interesting about the Eish Kodesh when you study his writings is he wasn't, you know, people think a lot of times you read writings of Hasidic Rebbes and different places, and a lot of it is very optimistic, and it's a lot about, you know, having hope and tikvah, and a lot of the messages are very upbeat a lot of the time. And in many ways, you read through the Eish Kodesh, he's writing, literally, he gave all of these pieces that were written down in the book were things that he spoke, were drashot, were divrei Torah, they were all things that he said live in that time. And he was a realist. He didn't pretend like the Jews are going through a happy time in history. Yet, he was still able to balance between, you're going to see it very strongly in this piece, there's a number of pieces like this, this is one that stands out. He was able to balance between giving the people hope, but not false hope. Letting them live through the moment that they were living through with a sense of, let's try to take each step, each moment that we have, and try to make the best of it, and try to make it something. Even when we realize everything else that's going on around us. So he writes about this relationship between Purim and Yom Kippurim. And this to me, it's heart-wrenching to read, and it gives you kind of a window into the world that they were going through. But it's also very inspiring and gives us a lot of chizuk as well. So he says, Efshar miremez gam lazeh. Shekemo, there's a hint here, there's a secret. Shekemo, I'm in the middle of the page where it says Lepurim. Shekemo Yom Kippurim, Hatanipa tshuva b'yom hazeh. The experience of Yom Kippur. There's fasting. There's tshuva. Lo imrotze otam adam lasotam oseh. There isn't this like, you know what? Today, I'm not going to do tshuva. Like on Yom Kippur itself, right? On the day of Yom Kippur. You're just going to wake up and say, you know what? This Yom Kippur, I'm not going to do the tshuva thing. I'm not going to do the tani thing. We don't. His expression is basically, This isn't something we see in the realm of choice. That's what Yom Kippur is. Yom Kippur is a day of tshuva and a day of tani. Rak beini rotzeh bein lo. Mekayimim mipnei gzeirat HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it is. That's what Yom Kippur is. We don't look at Yom Kippur as, you know what, I'm not in the mood, I'm not going to do tshuva today. Kein gam simchas Purim. So is the Simcha of Purim. It's a beautiful concept and really very much tied into the earlier ideas. Lo rak ima adam me'atzma besimcha o kol panim me'matzav she'chol ha'samech et atzma tzarech ha'samech. There's a bit of simcha here in the house. There's an obvious, for some people, there's an obvious reason to be besimcha. You're going through, right?
Balloons.
You're going through a great time in your life. Hopefully everybody's going through a great time in their life. Things are good, school's going well, grades are good, you got a great job for the summer, got engaged, whatever, you have a new nephew, you have a new niece, you have simchas. It's very easy to be besimcha on Purim, when you're besimcha, in general. Right? That's an easy thing to do. So for that person, it's not really like oh, today I'm going to be besimcha. That's like a constant in that person's life. You have to be marbe besimcha. You have to do a little bit more. But the constant, it's stable. Gamkein simchas Purim. Lo rakim adam me'atzma besimcha al kol panim me'matzav she'chol ha'samech ratzo tzarech l'samech. Or you can even get yourself into that state. Ragam im hu b'shveilut v'shver leiv ha'moach v'kol ruchon nirmas. Even if you're in a low place, a broken heart, a crushed spirit, even in that place where a person can get to, and you better believe it, these people were there. This is where they were. This is where they were holding. It's a chok. You have to figure out a way to bring simcha into your world. You have to figure out a way. So if they could fight that fight in 1942, in the middle of darkness. It's pretty powerful stuff. Look at the second paragraph. So again, that is what you might call the human effort, or what the Hasidic writers will call itaruta dilatata. It's our input. We have to make an effort to turn Purim into a day of simcha, even if we in our own personal lives are not holding in that realm of happiness, of simcha, of whatever that's supposed to mean to each and every one of us. But there's a second level. It's not about what we do on Purim, it's what Purim does for us. It's what the day itself is able to impact us, just by the nature of it being on the calendar. And that is something that, to me, is so important for these people to hear and for everyone to hear. Kemoshe Yom HaKippurim, and this is a discussion already in the Gemara, it's called Itzumo Shel Yom HaKippur. Meaning the day itself. And I've heard this many times from people. Yom Kippur, I'm not always into it. It's hard. It's a long day. Sometimes you just need to sit and be. Whether it's in the shul, out of the shul, close your eyes. It's a long day. It's a hard day. It's a difficult day. Just the experience of Yom Kippur itself, that impacts a person. Just being in that environment. That makes a roshah. That does something for the person. And there's even opinion in the Gemara that says, look in the second line, filim him lo hishlim kol tshuvato me rebi shemachaper lo. Even if you didn't do a full tshuva, you still get kapara. You still get atoned. Why? Because the day of Yom Kippur, in and of itself, is so powerful that it affects that tshuva for you. Without you doing anything. I mean, you should try. Try to do your best. Purim has a similar power. Purim has a similar nature to it. And just imagine people hearing this. People needed something. They needed something to hang on to. Kein gam bepurim. Af shelo haya ha'isha Yisraeli besimcha. He's a realist. He's not pretending. Yivdu Hashem besimcha. Everybody's got a smile and everybody's got a clap and everybody's got a dance. No. He wasn't expecting people to be able to get to that level. But nonetheless, kefi shetzarich liyot, they can't get to that level. Umi meila, kol avodato shebepurim lo hayta b'shleimut. So you know what? Their personal experience wasn't at the fullest degree that they could get to. It's impossible in a certain environment, in certain scenarios. Mikol makom, ha-yeshua va-simcha, just the day of Purim itself. The moment of history that renews itself every year when we read the Megillah and we think about what happened. Bayamim ahem hazman hazeh, right? That's something that impacts us whether we do anything on Purim or whether we do nothing on Purim. Purim itself is mashpia. The day itself, the same way Yom Kippur is mashpia, Purim is mashpia. Shapurim po'el Yisrael, gam ata po'el ve'oseh. So he's validating the feelings. He's validating the feelings of these individuals, and at the same time, he's giving them hope. It's a very hard thing to do. And it's amazing, and he does it in a number of his pieces here. And what's the message for us? Yom Kippurim, Yom Kippurim. Lots of ideas here, I think, for me, at least. Happy for anyone else to take this message as well. Baruch Hashem, we aren't in such a situation. As individuals, as a nation, as a people, we have a lot to be thankful for, we have a lot to celebrate. So how much more so is the challenge upon us? Not just that Purim should be a day that impacts us, but Purim should be a day that we impact ourselves, we impact us, we impact all of Am Yisrael. So wish everybody a Purim Sameach. Thank you again to the Wassermans for sponsoring. And we should be together for Simchas and Marvim B'Simchas. Thank you. Yes.